Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Shamita Basu. School admissions have been at the forefront of a lot of New Yorkers' minds this week. And no, I'm not talking about how Aunt Becky bribed admissions officers to get her kids into USC. We're talking about admission to the most selective high schools in the city, schools that many students dream about attending. Decisions for schools like Stuyvesant High School, Bronx High School of Science, Brooklyn Technical, and others were released this week. And the results present a staggering racial disparity among the incoming freshman classes. At Stuyvesant, out of 895 slots, only 7 Black students were admitted. The other schools didn't fare much better, with Black and Latinx students consistently making up a disproportionately small fraction of the class. Now, Mayor Bill de Blasio has said the current admission system puts up a roadblock to racial and ethnic diversity. And the numbers out this week only confirm that. And while many agree that the admissions process should change, few seem able to agree on what those reforms should look like. Here now to walk us through the story is New York Times education reporter Eliza Shapiro and Stuyvesant High School alum Marlon Williams. Hi, Eliza. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, thank you.
And hi, Marlon.
Hello. Great to be here.
Let's start with talking about the test, the SHSAT, or Specialized High School Admissions Test. This is one decisive, super high-stakes exam that students can opt to take, and their score ultimately determines whether or not they're eligible to get into one of these top 8 elite high schools in New York. Eliza, can you talk a bit about that test? What is it designed to test for, and what else is admissions at these elite high schools based on?
So this is the only way to get into the 8 specialized high schools in New York City. Your grades don't matter. Your standardized test scores don't matter. No one wants a letter of recommendation. State law, New York state law, holds that this one single test is the sole determinant of entry. So this test tests your mastery of math and English, but there's been some heated debate in the last few years about whether it really tests everything that you learn in eighth grade. So say you graduate from eighth grade in New York City. Would you really know all the concepts that are tested on the exam? The answer for a lot of people has been no. So this is the only way in. You pass the test or you don't.
Mm-hmm. Now, some critics have said maybe it's time to get rid of this test altogether. What's the argument there? Does that movement have any legs?
The argument is that why is this test producing student bodies that look nothing like the New York City public school system, right? So the public school system is 70%, nearly 70% Black and Hispanic. The schools, the 8 specialized high schools, are 10% Black and Hispanic. So one of the ways this question has been framed is there something wrong with the kids or is there something wrong with the test and the system? And I think not everyone would agree with that framing. That's what advocates would say. But I think it's an interesting question to ponder. So this is the biggest push I've seen in my 5.5 years on this beat to eliminate the test. I don't believe it's going to happen this year because state legislature, state politicians in Albany have basically not taken up the issue because it is hugely controversial. So what we're really focusing on now is this huge advocacy push to make change. But the mayor's actual proposal to eliminate the test, I think, is dead in the water.
Mm-hmm. I want to bring Marlon in on this in a minute just because he's been through this process. But first, I want to invite some calls on this. Listeners, I especially want to hear from you if you're a parent who is in the process of preparing your kid for a big test that will determine their high school or even their middle school. Are you having deep thoughts about test prep, about access to resources, about the well-intentioned ways that some parents can unlevel the playing field? Give us a call. We want to hear from you. 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. Now, Marlon, I'd love to hear what your experience was like. You went to Stuyvesant, and you graduated. You were the class of 99, is that right?
Yep, 1999.
Talk a little bit about what your experience was like getting into that school.
For me, when I took the test, I actually didn't really realize fully what the test was all about. I knew that a number of my friends who I hung out with, that was a thing they were doing one Saturday, so that became the thing that I did.
You got peer pressured into taking a test?
Peer pressured into taking the test. Everybody else was taking it, so I took it too. And looking back, I wonder if I had knew of all the pressure that was associated with it, would I have been going into that test with all of that representational bias about what I needed to do and how I needed to perform.
And were you aware of Stuyvesant as a high school or the specialized high schools?
I knew of it as a high school, but actually even as a young person, 14, 15 years old, I had this perception that it wasn't actually a place for me. I wanted to go, my goal was to go to Townsend Harris and a couple other schools, which were like those places where I was culturalized to think that that's where the smart black kids went, right? Those who opted out of this whole testing system knew they were excellent and wanted to go to a place with other black students. That's where I wanted to go. But I also ended up taking the test and it was able to get admitted.
So you didn't do test prep specifically geared toward this test. No, just took it.
I just took it.
You took it cold. Well, tell me what it was like. How many other students of color were in your class at Stuyvesant?
They weren't that many other students of color. We were definitely there and we became friends. And I think in that spaces, you know that these are the folks I'm going to become friends with. But for me, there was always this sense. I remember after I got in, one of the first questions I was asked was, oh, did you get in on the discovery program? Which was this assumption that there was some way, because I was black, that I hadn't fully made it, and there was something that had to be done to get me in there. And that kind of story and those questions from the get-go had this sense of you don't fully fit or fully belong in this space. And that was something I had to combat throughout my 4 years there and even going into adulthood. I remember we were talking about Greek myths and Latin, and in my Latin class, and the different stories, and they told this story about how the gods made people, and the ones they loved the most, they washed them all over, and the ones they loved the least, they just did the hands and the feet so that they could not mess up the place. And I had this perception that I was that one that was left over and not really supposed to be there. And those were thoughts that stayed with me every time I took a test, every time I felt the anxiety and the need to perform of not fully fitting in. And those stories, I think, carry throughout your career there, and they become part of what you have to combat in any situation.
New York Times education reporter Eliza Shapiro is also on the line. Eliza, can you explain a little bit what state control means for these schools in terms of the admissions process and the test?
Sure. So here's a little bit of fun New York State legislative history. In 1971, there was a movement, a small movement, to consider whether the specialized high schools were in some ways, the admissions process was in some ways discriminatory against black and Hispanic students. So this was 1971, mind you, and people were thinking about, is there a way we can change the admissions process? As a way to preempt that, to prevent that from happening, the state legislature brought up this bill that has codified for the 50 years since, codified this specialized high school exam as the sole means of admission. So for the schools that are known as the Big Three, these are the most selective and most popular and oldest of the schools, Stuyvesant, Bronx Science, and Brooklyn Tech, the only way you can get into those schools is through the exam. It's technically the same for the newer five schools that were created under the Bloomberg administration, including Brooklyn Latin, Staten Island Tech. But in an interesting quirk that's worth people knowing about, the mayor, Bill de Blasio, can actually change the admission structure at those five newer schools, although he can't touch the three, the Big Three, as they're known. So there's a little bit of a dichotomy.
Right. The mayor has said that he would like to scrap the test, the SHSAT, right?
Well, right. Well, here's where the rubber meets the road, right? So the mayor has a very contentious proposal to scrap the SAT. SHSAT. He hasn't just said it. He has made a whole policy proposal around it. But he has rejected changing admissions at five of the eight schools himself, the five that he can actually change himself, because he says he doesn't want to create a two-tiered system. He wants to deal with all eight schools at once. But it's worth noting that the state technically only controls admission for three of the eight.
Well, let's take a call. Our board is lighting up right now. Paul in South Jamaica, you're on WNYC, and you said that you're a test prep tutor, correct?
Yes, I am. Yes. Good afternoon. Yeah, I teach in Flushing, though. I live in South Jamaica, but most of my students, I have to say practically all of them, are Chinese or Asian, but usually Chinese, some Indian, and I haven't had Korean students yet. But their parents are willing to pay quite a lot of money to get us to, you know, work with the kids. We're not going to, not working magic, just going over the tests, and we practice tests and explaining how the answers work and everything. So I think the parents really bought into it, you know, I'm saying, dedicated to getting their kids through.
Mm. Paul, thanks for calling in. And Eliza, to get to the heart of the issue here, I think what some people are struggling with in this story and is this idea of a merit-based system being the most fair system. You know, those who score the highest on the test should get those seats is the argument there. But what Paul is bringing up there and what really the question is the test truly a test of merit across the board if not every student takes it, right? Money and resources are a factor here. Can you talk about how this argument is playing out?
Yeah, I mean, we can't deny that money and resources are a factor here. There is a massive test preparation industry all across the city that helps kids prepare for the exam. Some kids start prepping years before the exam, while other kids might find out about it a few months before it exists or walk in cold. I mean, there's a huge variation in how kids prepare and whether they prepare. And, you know, we hear lots of stories about low-income and immigrant Asian American families truly cobbling together every last dollar to pay for test prep. And those stories are really important, and they're a key part of this debate. It's also worth noting that some families simply straight up cannot afford test prep at all. So not every kid is coming in on an equal playing field, I would say.
Marlon, you look like you want to chime in.
Yeah, and I think that's an important point. I think we have this fallacy that what the test is testing is excellence, but excellence is actually a really different concept than the exceptionalism, right? And so what I think the test is really requiring is for there to be extraordinary and exceptional things to happen in order for you to go through. I think excellence is something that if we look generally through any population, like excellence is evenly distributed. Exceptionalism requires you to overcome barriers that are placed in front of folks to even knowing that the test exists, and that's the thing that they should even desire. And so for me, there's a difference between are we testing excellence or are we testing exceptionalism, and we congratulate ourselves for testing excellence when what's really coming out is the exceptionalism that's required for systems to even produce these types of outcomes.
Let's take a call from Courtney in Brooklyn. Courtney, you're on WNYC.
Hi, good afternoon. I am African American, and right now I'm a clinical neuropsychologist, so I work with students who for intelligence testing and things like that, and actually do research towards making sure that tests are unbiased. And when I was a student in elementary school or junior high school, I actually took these tests, and I passed and got into all three of the specialized high schools. Back in the day when I was taking it, it was only Brooklyn Tech, Stuyvesant, and Bronx High School of Science. But my parents opted not to have me go to those schools because of the disparity in population, because we know, and now that I'm older, I kind of understand why I was disappointed back then that they didn't let me go. But now that I know that kids who go into these situations, like Marlon was saying, when they are in a place where there's not a lot of people who look like them, even if they are excelling in intellectual developments and capability, just the idea that they have no one else or very few people who look like them has a toll, takes a toll on their ability to thrive in those situations. And so I think that part of the issue is getting more kids in there. But even once they get to the place where they're in the school, how do we help them make sure that they feel like they are a part and they belong and they deserve to be there?
Courtney, thank you for calling in. Marlon, do you want to react to some of what Courtney's saying there?
Yeah.
Because you took the other path, sort of, that she's describing.
Yeah, I took the other path, and now as a parent, I wonder what path would I take for my own child. I remember even once you're in the school, there are still barriers that are set up. As I was applying for colleges, which is the thing that Stuyvesant does so well, there were particular schools that I wanted to apply to, but I didn't match the perspective of my counselors of who was supposed to go to those schools. And it actually required teachers advocated on my behalf to get the waivers to apply to certain schools, because they didn't think I would get in. And in the end, I did. And I remember taking those admissions letters as my victory lap back to the counselors who weren't going to give me the waiver so that I could apply to certain schools. But even when you are able to get in and to achieve on the same level as others, you still have systems that say that you don't match what is supposed to be there, and they try to work against you, and you consistently have to fight against that. And I think my ability to figure out myself as a person, and particularly as a Black person, is something that I had to do after the fact, because in that moment, it was just about the performance and working within that framework.
Let's see if we can fit in one last call. Renee in Manhattan. Sorry, we'll have to keep it brief, but you tell us, your son went to Stuyvesant in 98, correct?
Yes, that's correct. What I am wondering is why we have to limit ourselves in New York City to just these specialized schools. There are some wonderful other high schools that could be developed and enhanced, perhaps, and then have more students enter. We're always talking about the limited number. It seems to me that if they put resources toward education, that would, you know, grow what are some of the best high schools, we wouldn't have so much of this problem, that the gifted students from all races and all aspects of life could come in and they would be welcomed in schools that are of high quality.
Renee, thank you for that. Eliza, you want to have the last word, last 30 seconds of what we're looking to next in this debate? I know that Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie tweeted yesterday that they're looking to schedule hearings in early May to look at the admission standards at these specialized high schools. What are you keeping an eye on next in this story?
Yeah, I think this has emerged as one of the biggest fights in New York City, biggest debates in New York City. I would certainly not encourage anyone to hold their breath for Albany to pass this legislation. And frankly, I would not be surprised if we were having the same conversation a year from now.
New York Times education reporter Eliza Shapiro, Stuyvesant High School alum Marlon Williams, thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Listeners, that's our show. Thanks for listening to All of It. You can join us tomorrow at noon on WNYC. And in the meantime, you can follow us on Instagram and on Twitter at All of It WNYC. All of It is produced by Megan Ryan, Rosie Guerin, Catherine Millsop, Ursula Summer, Simon Close, Jordan Loff, and Rob Dozer. Matt Mirando is our engineer, and Luscious Jackson does our theme music. Happy Nowruz, everyone. Happy first day of spring. I hope you notice the clock at 5:58 this evening and smile, knowing it's the moment of the equinox and a moment to be hopeful for all that comes in the new year. Eid Shalom Mubarak. I'm Shamita Basu. Thank you for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.
A lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.